Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Jersey Revolution Radio. I'm here today with Justice Roundtree. Justice and I met for the first time in Highland Park at the church in Highland Park, where he did a presentation on the injustices of our prison system from personal experience. And it was quite moving. Not only is he a great activist who has that personal experience driving him forward, but he's also a beautiful artist. And I know that if you hang on before we leave today, you're going to get a chance to hear some of this great artwork that he does. But he's definitely more than one thing, as most activists are. Most of us have different talents. Most of us use those talents in different ways for causes that we believe in. And Justice has certainly shown that he has that ability to turn both his personal experience and his artwork into things that can help build awareness of a very important cause in the realm of social justice. How you doing today, brother? It's good to talk to you. Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, what's up, Brian? Thanks for having me. I appreciate this platform and definitely appreciate the kind words that you have for me, you know. Thank you.
Well, it's true, man. So since I've known you, it's been a lot of poetry work, and you do a regular thing, 360 Poetry Night with Justice. Can you tell us about where that came from and where it's at right now and where you hope to see it go?
Right. Where it came from was inside my mind. I'm an artist, and so I've always kind of pursued ways to express myself as an artist. And in this particular time in my life, I wanted to have a poetry show so I could showcase not only poetry, but I wanted it, you know, to be like an open microphone for anybody that had anything they wanted to say, or any talent they wanted to display, rap, sing, play an instrument, dancers. So I created a space downtown Newark that, you know, has been going on for a year. Last month was the 1 year anniversary. I started on 420, and oddly enough, and 420 was the anniversary.
Was that planned to celebrate on 420, or was that just a coincidence?
It was definitely just a coincidence. When we picked the date, it had more to do with just giving us time to establish it, and the fact that it was the day after Malcolm X's birthday. I mean, I'm sorry, not the day after his birthday, like so close to his birthday, like in May is his birthday, actually, May 19th. But that those are things that we was thinking about more so than so after it was scheduled, that's when I kind of got hip to the 420 connection. It's been a year, and it's been a proud to say it's like the most successful show in the city of Newark, and I'm glad that I was able to do it, because I'm able to bring people from my area of social justice to the show, to have an impact on the show, so I connect different worlds. And it's important, you know, in the place that I'm in Newark. Newark historically is an art place. It's where Mary Baraka, one of the leaders in the black, well, the founder and a leader in the black arts movement in the 60s and the 70s. You know, he started right. He's from Newark. His son is the current mayor of Newark, actually. And his wife, his widow, she's an amazing artist as well. So living in a town where basically the people that spearheaded the black arts movement came from. And with that, they brought people from all over the world would come to this town, you know, Nina Simone to Maya Angelou, or, you know, everybody really that would come here and, you know, gather at their household and organize and do the work to make people aware and to solve some of our social issues. So for me to be able to continue that legacy right smack dab downtown Newark is a blessing in itself. So it came from that. That's what we do right now. Every month I feature an artist, and the artist is usually a very well accomplished or respected or critically acclaimed artist. There's several of them in the community, that travel the world and compete and represent the New Jersey State and have it ranked like highly in the poetry slams and competitions. So I feature those type of artists there, and it's an open mic. Everybody gets on, and it's a very inclusive, welcoming, and an educational space. It's definitely not just a space where it's like a good time. It's a good time, but you're gonna hear stories that'll make you, you know, motivate you or make you cry, or you'll learn some things that you didn't know before, or definitely meet some people that you didn't meet before. So that's what I'm doing with that, Brian.
Cool, man. And what kind of community are you attracting when you say that, you know, it's an open mic. I can go there and talk about anything I want any night.
Right. The Green. Right. I mean, we've had the Green Party up in the house. Nice. It's a space where people actually from all walks of life. I mean, it's a black owned bookstore, right? The only black owned bookstore in the city of Newark. I think really in the whole state, but in the city of Newark. It definitely is a place where, you know, in the smack dab in the middle of you know, gentrification and everything, you have the only space that you could bring your children to and they could be fed. Or we have, you know, they have the books for breakfast thing that they do. It's a community spot. So it's definitely a place where the people of the community, this is a traditionally black city, Newark, could come and have some type of reprieve, because there's nowhere else they're going to, you know, black people are going to be able to walk on Bar Street and, you know, be a resident of a black town and be welcome, quite frankly. You're not going to be able to go to Barnes and Nobles and find books that have speak to anything about your story, about your struggle, about the oppression, about ways to figure it out. It's the only place in this city that has that. So, but it also, the struggle is also, you know, it's not only black people's struggle, right? It's the struggle of those of us in society who don't partake in all the benefits of America. Those of us who've been disenfranchised. So, you know, the poor people come in all shapes, sizes, forms, and shades of tone and color. So, you know, everybody's in there. You know, that's all I'll say about the demographics and stuff.
How long have you been out of jail, man?
Right. Well, I was incarcerated for a long period of time. I was incarcerated for 23 years. Wow. And, and I always kind of like put it in a way that I basically treated those 23 years like I was in college. You know, like I used it to educate myself in various ways, spiritually, just, you know, getting to understand myself, or culturally, and also further my education, became a paralegal on the inside, invested in my education there, took some college, did some semesters in college there. Illegally, I was working on people's cases, so I began to be like an advocate, because I understood and I knew the laws, pertaining to my situation, to the criminal court system. And then I just continued to expand because I wanted to be able to help people in different ways. So, you know, I would learn family law, and I would learn civil law, and I would learn, you know, how the federal law is applied in certain cases. So that just developed a sense of organizing and advocacy within myself that I practiced over the years, along with the fact that my cultural and my historical studies just kind of put things in perspective for me of continuing the fight that, you know, people that I looked up to, like Malcolm X, had laid down, and you know, several other people. So I just, you know, I found myself in a way during that experience. And when I got out, I just continued to work. I worked with, people that I was in contact with. Because I would reach out to people, even though I wasn't in society, I would reach out to people in society and let them know of my intent to want to work and to use my experience to benefit others and to educate and to help to, you know, to fight for justice in areas where we see that there's injustice and any way I could be of use. So those are relationships I built on the inside, and I just, you know, basically connected right with people like Amos Carey and Scott Wellfell, and we went right to work about, you know, speaking about my experiences. I went right to work initially, like on this bill that was out the solitary confinement bill. It was, I don't have the number on me actually right now, but it was SS-51, and it's currently still, it was vetoed by Christie last session. So now in this session, there's a new governor, and he's, you know, verbally stated that he would sign it, and we got it before them. So one thing I do is I kind of go around and I share my experience. When I was inside, I was in solitary confinement over the years, and I also was a paralegal at different years. So I would represent people, at their disciplinary hearings to determine if they were going to go to solitary confinement or not based off of some infraction they may have received. Whatever. So I kind of seen both sides of it, and I would, I had some mild success. I took a lot of pride in the fact that I was able to keep people out of there in many cases. In a lot of cases, people, they didn't really even understand where they were at because they were so mentally out of it, and they were being, like, you know, held accountable for charges that were written against them, and, you know. So I would just, anywhere I could bring a measure of equality and justice to the process and, you know, to people that don't have anybody to advocate for them, you know, I put myself in a position to advocate for them. And I continued that work when I got out, speaking about those experiences, about what it felt like and smelled like and the type of psychological trauma that you go through experiencing that type of experience and overcoming it. And I do work, based off all my experiences, because my experiences run the whole gamut from being a young knucklehead, right, to making bad decisions, to changing the life around. So that incorporates, that involves like rehabilitation, that involves working in the law aspect of it, that involves like the reentry aspect of it, and all of that comes with challenges. That involves like the effects that incarceration has on the family. That's not just the person. It's like, you know, I have a son. He was 11 months old, you know, when I got incarcerated. So just dealing with a family aspect of it, there's so many different tentacles to this issue, and I've experienced all of them and overcame them. So puts me in a funny position to be able to speak to these issues because I understand them from so many different perspectives.
That's and one of the things that I think you do so well is not, you know, you've had these issues and you can communicate them to everybody. And I guess you really, you could tell you spent a lot of time keeping your mind strong, man, because when you did get out and since you've been out, man, it's rare to see anybody under any circumstances work as hard as you worked towards, you know, these causes. And I know that your voice helped educate me about what it's like dealing with being locked up. I've never been, you know, and so, but I know that, you know, you made me, you know, you made me feel your pain while also educating me. What is the psychological experience? What does prison try to do to you while you're in there?
Right. Well, I mean, it really tries to make you know that you're not worth anything. You know, you're not worthy of being fed properly, of being clothed. Like, none of your needs, your human needs, really matter. So that makes you consider if you're even a human when you know for a fact that you're being treated worse than people's pets. So and there's nothing human about the experience of being in there. Everything is like your product. You know, and that's why the 13th Amendment is like so relevant, because it's the amendment that was, intended or written, or at least it professes to be the amendment that eliminates or makes slavery illegal. But there's a clear clause within the 13th Amendment in the language that states, except as a punishment for crime of those who've been duly convicted of a crime. So unless, you know, they're saying basically slavery is outlawed except if you're in prison. So it was totally acceptable to treat myself and millions of other people, black people and poor people. You know, black people are disproportionately represented inside the prison. Like, you know, it's a 12-to-1 ratio, you know, between the other races. So, and it's, you know, one out of every three black men are in prison or under some, you know, form of court, for, you know, supervisory, you know, whether it's probation, parole, the bracelet, and all these other conditions that just within the system. And you know, there's more people in prison now, you know, black people that were in slavery when, you know, slavery was an issue. So
and that spills out.
That's ridiculous.
And I was saying, and that spills out into the wider community. The community's locked up, you know?
Right. Yeah, because unfortunately what happens in like a lot of these black communities where black people live at is that they kind of adopted the ways that are destructive, the same ways that were made to destroy them. You kind of like, just like our systems, like if we eat some food that our body's not really, doesn't go well with our body by nature, but if you continue to eat it, your body will adjust to it. It will like become a build an immunity to it, you know, and that's kind of like a microcosm or at least a reflection of what we see in the larger aspect of the community. We've kind of adapted and become immune and desensitized to things that are totally inhumane and destructive. Yeah. And, you know, so it's unfortunate. It's a spiral and it's psychological. The trauma I went through, man, is like, you know, being demeaned and told that, like, anywhere you had to go, you had to strip and bend over and cough. And if they didn't think you coughed, you know, well enough, you cough again. And people just abusing that authority that's been given to them, and just to be subject to no justice at all. Yeah. You know, whether it was in the court system, like you're just shown continually that you don't have any worth, you know, and be cut off from any levels of society, placed in dungeons inside of prison. So like prison is already like a wife away from society. Then you get placed in a society that's away from the general population in the prison. You really know that you're buried, you know, under things. And, you know, to have no control over anything in your life, whether it's like, you know, communications or even what you hear or what you see or what you smell, to have no control over or say so about any of that and just be subject to it and no rights at all is just a very dehumanizing experience. And yeah. And then you learn to try to adapt to all of it, and then you get out, right? Where that stuff isn't as intense, but, you know, it just doesn't stop, you know? Like, you don't know, you spent all these years, like, being an independent warrior to fight against this, to survive against it, and then get out to people that might want to love you. Like, how do you accept that love when you don't really understand? You haven't really developed love, you know? So that causes problems and stuff. It can, you know. So it's a lot of stuff, and psychological, a lot of it.
Absolutely. And it's wrong, because, you know, I look at you can be just one example, but I know a lot of people who have spent some time in this system, this unfair, unjust, racist system, and come out of it and produced wonderful art as you have, or gotten good jobs, or helped counsel other people. And so right. the premise that your lives are not worth anything, which I understand how, you know, it works to do that and make you feel that way, is wrong entirely, because there is worth and value in every human being. And it's a shame that we don't recognize that and foster that in the system. And that's what you do, not only tell your story, but you're, through your activism, you're putting forth some solutions. And you mentioned isolated confinement as being one of them. What other things do you see that we need to do to turn what we have as a mass incarceration, modern day slavery ring, into something that's truly rehabilitative, you know, and gives people a chance to become, you know, productive members of society?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, of course I shoot for what, you know, my ideal situation would be to abolish these prisons, because this entire system, you know, came out of a slave system. I mean, we talking about law enforcement was born out of slave catchers. So the entire system is wired, fucked up, excuse my French, right? So I don't really look forward to reforming or rehabilitating. I mean, how do you rehabilitate the slave master? I don't understand how to do that. I don't think it could be done. I mean, it has its original intent. The Constitution was written in the way it was written. It wasn't written to include black people, right? So, I mean, you can't really salvage that in my eyes, right?
No.
However, I understand, you know, being practical about things, and in between that time and when people are ready to adopt those type of theories or thinking, you know, you try to make the best, I guess, out of what you have. So I do work on like legislation to try to stop people that have like special like mental health challenges and pregnant women and juveniles and people that are elderly, like 65 and older, from going into solitary confinement. I mean, that's a start. And I think the most important thing I can do is just teach the truth about these experiences, but also be able to not just tell my story, but put it in a context where you can learn from it. Like once you view things, like just for instance, my statement about, I mean, I think it's important that we understand why there's solitary confinement, the truth behind it, that New Jersey was like a corridor state in between New York and Philadelphia. So in the 60s, when the Black Panthers and other organizations that, you know, had revolutionary thoughts and ideas, they were under attack by this government with the counterintelligence program and even, you know, like all the law enforcement. It's important to understand the origin of law enforcement. It's like, why would they want to attack that? Well, if you understand that the original intent was to chase down people that were deemed as slaves and bring them back, then you understand that that's why they were like stopping Assad and Shakur and the Black Panthers on the New Jersey Turnpike. That's why these people have a harsh racist philosophy in law enforcement towards people, you know, and that's why it makes sense when you look at it, like that's what they put in motion to do. So if you'll understand that why we have solitary confinement to this day. I mean, they continue their legacy. Like they put Assad Shakur in solitary confinement. They put her co-defendants in solitary confinement. That's how they started it in New Jersey, trying to suppress the ideologies and the philosophies of those who have revolutionary thoughts. They didn't want them to mix and mingle with the population, so they would put them in control units and things like that. But flash forward 30 years later, I was put in control units for having the same type of thoughts or even reading, you know, the autobiography of Assad was enough to get you placed in a solitary confinement. So they continue to do what they do. And I think it's important for me to be the whistleblower in a sense and to let people know the truth behind this stuff. There is no rehabilitating that. You know, this is a business now, right? So this is corporations and legislators have been working together to create laws that are only applied in certain neighborhoods, you know? And so this is a big business. They're not going to let me, you, or anybody else come and change how they do business. They're not going to, you know, be willing to do that, right? So understanding that reality is what shapes my method of approach, knowing that, you know, they're not going to stop getting money. They're not going to stop capitalizing. They wrote these laws intentionally. They're using them for their advantage intentionally, and they have too much money and power to want to say, okay, you're right, let's change some things. Right? It's not going to happen.
No, it's not, and it's not, and you ticked on it a little bit there. You know, that you have a for-profit system. Our prison industry is a for-profit system, and like any other major system that we run in this country, whether it be healthcare or our economic system, it's all based on profit and not on what's good for social justice or what's good for the conditions of people in our society. It's just good for whatever you can make money on, and that doesn't lead to ethical decisions. You know, it just doesn't lead to ethical decisions. Those that challenge the system, like you said, face pretty harsh repercussions. And that's how we maintain our system. People got to start realizing that the level of violence that's used that we sometimes see, you know, overseas, that level of violence is being used right here at home in our prison system, in our immigration enforcement activity, in how we police right. communities. And, you know, you're drawing the eye to that. And I appreciate your work, man. You work with a couple of different organizations. I'm not sure if we mentioned them all yet, but the New Jersey Campaign New Jersey Campaign for Alternatives to Isolated Confinement, which I know you talked about. That's the organization that helped get that bill onto Governor Murphy's desk, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's a collaboration of several different organizations from the New Jersey Institute for Social Justice, the ACLU, the people from the Green Party. CAKE is just basically people that have come to the table You had the American Friends Service Committee to say that, you know, to use our resources to get the solitary confinement bill passed and hopefully get solitary confinement eliminated. So people could go to new, you know, the new, what's that, the NJK, like CAIC.org, and they could get all the information there, definitely.
And
I know we have an event. Yeah.
And we also have an event coming up here on June 3rd in Trenton. Who's involved with that, and what can you tell us what that's about?
Right. Well, that's organized by myself and other members of CAKE. And what that is we did one in Rutgers in February, and it was a turnout of a couple hundred people, and it's a free public education event. And what we do, we bring people in, and we have people that survived solitary confinement, such as myself. We break people up into groups, maybe four or five groups, and then each group has one or two people that, like myself, that were survivors of solitary confinement, and they share their personal insights and stories and experiences with that group of people in an interactive experience. And also, and we have a virtual reality. There's these goggles you put on, and it takes you inside the cell of solitary confinement, and then you move your head around, and you'll see, like, the ceiling, and you'll see the, like, the gook that's been up there for years, and you look down, and you can see the bunk. I mean, it really makes you feel, I've experienced it just to, you know, kind of check it and see if it was legit, and it really does. It takes you inside that cell. You hear the voices of people that were in there, recorded on there, and also you hear the noise that goes on inside the prison. So, you know, it's that, you'll be able to do that. There'll be, you know, like refreshments and all that good stuff. So it's a totally free event. And then after, you know, people hear from the survivors of solitary confinement and everything, that we in their small, in their broken off groups, we come back together and we discuss these issues. We have some people they know that come through as far as legislators that's helping sponsor the bill and get it through. And we discuss it, and we have Q&A and things like that. So it's the first event was at Rutgers in February, and it was a total success. And the next one is going to be in the Trenton area, and I sent you a flyer for it. It's,
yes.
I think it's the Westminster Presbyterian Church is going to host it, and there's going to be a lot of people there. And we're going to do it again, and you know, hopefully, you know, to get people some things that they could, like, directories for their local public officials, legislative officials that they could contact. You know, there's a lot of information that will be given out too as well. So that's something that's June 3rd. And anybody that can make it out there, or anybody, you know, before we leave, I guess I'll give you my contact information. You can just contact me, and I can make sure I get you everything you need, you know.
And we'll be putting up that stuff on the website at njrevolutionradio.com. So we'll make sure that we post all this stuff alongside your podcast. Is there anything? And so before we go, I want to make sure we got everything in. Did you get all your contact information? How do people get in touch with you to support these events?
Let me say this. Right. Let me say this. Well, the poetry shows I host are every third Friday of the month. So the next show is May 18th, and that's on Broad Street, 867 Broad Street, North New Jersey. Starts about 7:30 p.m. Those are amazing shows, and you'll have a lot of – I always incorporate social justice. This month's theme is Mother's Day, and it's Malcolm X's birthday. So we'll have, you know, maybe Larry Ham from Pop was in there last year, and he was really giving us a lot of insight about Malcolm X and his connection to North. And how people, our own people, were scared of Malcolm X, and that was very educational. But also, June 3rd is at the Westminster Presbyterian Church in Trenton. It's from 3 to 5, or 3 to 6, I think it is, the hours. But come on out and to that free event and learn more about solitary, how you can get involved. My Facebook is Justice Roundtree. It's spelled Justice, like regular Justice, J-U-S-T-I-C-E. And Roundtree is spelled without a D. So it's R-O-U-N-T-R-E-E. And that's my contact information on both Facebook and Instagram. If you want a phone number where you can contact me at, I guess you can call 862 888-8600. You know, I do a lot of speaking throughout the state of New Jersey. And if you want, you know, us to come in, I also do trainings that kind of show the effects that incarceration have on the family. I do those through Rutgers. We do those a few times a year. If you're interested in learning about those trainings, that me and Amos Kelly, the associate pastor at the Reformed Church of Highland Park, that we conduct, that'll, you know, contact us for that. We have a whole family integration game that we created that really shows how these issues sway and pull and bring apart or pull together the family, with, depending on what the person is incarcerated go through. It's really dope. And educational and eye-opening. And I think that's about it as far as contact information, Brian.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on today. You know, I could spend days with you, man, listening to, you know, you talk about your experience. That education has provided me with a basis for a better narrative going out there and talking about these issues. And I hope you gave a little bit of that to the people listening today. If you want to learn more about Justice's work, you can contact him at any of the info he just gave out. I'll make sure that that gets up on the website under podcasts, and just check us out. If you get a chance to make it to these poetry nights, that's a great date night, man. So grab your significant other and go out there and check out some beautiful poetry and some good spoken word stuff. Justice, before we go, I did promise my audience a little art out of you, though. I know that you said you had something on your phone that you'd like to pull up and maybe read to us before we go out. So now that we've got all the plugs out of the way and I've made people listen to this whole thing, can we treat them with a little poetry?
Sure. I'm sure I got something. I don't care what nobody thinks. They say times have gotten better. I say they still stink. These prisons was made for my people. The system has never been applied equal, has never been nothing but evil. At 19, I was sentenced by a judge who would have strung me up a few decades ago. This is the mentality, the infrastructure that supports the concept of white supremacy, illusions with real consequence manifested in every fabric of society. We all know it's harder to fight for justice when you're poor. The focus is more like trying to get that next meal on the table. Squeezing pennies from jobs that rob you more than they pay you. Robbed of the opportunity to live a life empowered by your dreams while making somebody else's come true. And we all know that robberies and shootings go hand in hand. Or maybe it's both hands wrapped around a weapon that shoots us in our own backyard. You can't seek justice in a system that's connected to a structure that's designed to oppress you in the first place. But those who think they are here to protect us, I respectfully suggest you wake up. They protect the same interests they always have. The biggest misnomer is police brutality, when apparently the police are authorized to be brutal every chance they get. You don't put 20 rounds in a human being and walk away unless you're the police. A confrontation every black man has ran through his mind at least one time. Will he survive? Be able to tell his account? Will his mother ever get the real facts, or will she just join the dead son wife club? Will he be murdered and mourned for the 2 weeks it takes to the next police shooting? Would it be retaliation, maybe snipers on rooftops, addresses of authorities, games like that? And it's not just the black man. It's the women, the children. All poor people are born on this train to oppression, where every day we struggle to keep a roof over our heads, creating jobs for ourselves because they pay don't equal our labor and time. We become mathematicians through struggle, counting our blessings while multiplying our hustle. I'm trying to solve this problem while we keep dividing ourselves and subtracting our strength in the process. These ain't radical thoughts. These are screams for solidarity, a factual confidence that we with the least have the most. That we could design an infrastructure that supports the concept of people power. That we could cooperatively use the resources we already have to remove this foot of our collective necks. All those in favor say aye so we can vote and get this over with tonight. I want unity tonight. I want healing in my community tonight. I want affordable housing to start being affordable tonight. I need cities to stop being food deserts tonight. I want the police to respect my community tonight. I want the school system to teach the truth and shut their doors tonight. I want them to stop disproportionately locking up my people. Yeah, my people. Yeah, my people. Tonight.
Yeah. Justice, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Cool, man.
Take care, man.
All right, I appreciate you, bro. Thank you.